how old are you today?
89.
Okay. What is your job history? Like, what kind of jobs have you had in the past?
Oh, oil fields and truck drivers and maintenance and run a shelf.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to sit over here. Where were you born and where were you raised?
Born at Hudson, Kansas in 1915. And went out to Colorado for a while, I mean when I was a baby. And lived on a claim out there. My dad and mom and brothers and sisters lived on a claim in Colorado. Then we moved to Kinsley. From Kinsley we moved over to Lewis on a farm. We had a pretty good sized farm over there. Then we moved back to Kinsley and lived there lived there all the time since till World War II.
Yeah. How old were you during at the start of the Korean War?
Let's see. Let's figure that one out.
Approximate.
Well, see, the Korean War was in 50, and I was born in 15. What's the difference?
50, 35.
45. I was 35. Too old. 35. I was really too old to be in Korea. I was way too old to be in Korea.
35?
I think that's what it was.
Okay.
See, I was 25 when I was in the Army. In World War II.
Yeah. Were you married at this time?
No.
No children?
No.
Okay, what branch of service were you in?
Well, when I went over there, I was in the infantry. I mean, when I got with the unit, and then they put me with a Mississippi National Guard outfit. It was heavy equipment engineers.
Yeah.
And I was motor pool sergeant for them in Korea.
Yeah. And what was your rank most of the time?
Sergeant First Class.
Sergeant First Class. So, what kind of training did you receive?
Well, to go over there, none.
None?
But I'd been in from 41 to 45. So
yeah.
I had basic infantry training is what I had.
Okay. Did you make any friends? Any good friends?
Well, yeah, but I never kept their names because I didn't figure to see them anyway.
Why did you originally join the service?
I didn't. I was drafted.
He was drafted? Okay. And how'd you feel about being over there?
Oh, it didn't bother me. I figured it was a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Where were you first stationed?
When I went in the Army?
Yeah, or in the Korean War. Where did you first?
Well, I was stationed in Japan first. Then we went to Busan. And then we followed all the fighting. I was in heavy equipment engineers, but before, heavy equipment engineers stayed way behind, you know, because they had all big equipment. But in Korea, the stuff that they tore up on the front, the combat engineers didn't have anything big enough to put it back together with. So we was actually, we're heavy equipment combat engineers is what we actually were.
Okay.
Rebuilding bridges and
yeah,
tunnels and stuff.
Huh. In what ways did the war change the way you live?
None, I don't think.
Didn't change?
I've always said that the service cultivates what you already were. If you were pretty good when you went in, you'd be pretty good when you come out.
What did you eat for meals? What was your food?
Well, we ate RC rations and K rations. And then when we was in camp, we got regular meals, you know, just like anywhere.
Yeah.
Beef and and everything just like you would here.
What did you do in your free time for fun?
Probably get drunk. go to town.
Yeah. Did you know any wounded or killed soldiers personally?
Yeah. Knew quite a few of them.
Knew quite a few. Did you get a lot of mail?
Yeah, quite a little. I didn't write much, so I didn't get much.
Okay. Who'd you mostly get mail from?
Oh, my folks and people from around Kinsley. Most of the mail was kind of disrupted in that area where I was at.
Yeah. Were you ever captured or held prisoner of war?
No.
Okay. How was the media up there?
There wasn't any.
There wasn't any? You didn't hear anything about the way things were going
at
home?
Not much.
Okay. How'd you feel about the enemy?
The what?
The enemy. How'd you feel about
it? Oh, I didn't think much of them. See, mainly, the best part of the bunch was Chinese.
Yeah.
See, they was in the war most of the time.
Yeah.
They furnished a lot of soldiers. And see, they don't even, life is very worthless to the Chinese and the Koreans. They get them killed by the thousands. Just keep it coming.
So you never really got in contact with some of your old war buddies?
Oh yeah, I went to Houghton, Kansas to breakfast about every other month for quite a few years.
Yeah.
Then they all outlived all them, so I haven't been back there for a while.
What was it that you were telling me about a boat or something?
Yeah, I was on a ship that was sunk in the Mediterranean, and we lost 1,100 men on the deal. The bad part about this ship was the fact that it was hit by a German guided missile.
Yeah.
So it was put as secret. So the rest of the time I was in the service, if I put anything about that being sunk with a guided missile, they offered to court-martial me if I ever put that on the record again, because it didn't happen. And it was still under quarantine, you know.
Yeah.
As far as most of the Army knew, it never had happened.
Huh.
But it took 50 years for them to decide that it did sink.
So, in what year did you quit the service, or
was no longer
with the service?
I got out on my birthday in 1952.
On your birthday, man. Mm-hmm. Okay, is there really anything else that you could think of offhand that you...
Well, what the main thing was wrong was we never had any equipment. We didn't have enough clothes, didn't have enough sleeping bags. In fact, when I came home from Korea, I came home while they were just going to sign it wasn't a peace treaty, but it stopped fighting. I had to leave all my clothes there, only what I had on, and the only thing I got on the ship with was what I had on. Left it there so the other guys would... That was the ruling. You just didn't take anything out of there.
Yeah. Did you have any nicknames for the enemy?
I never did.
No nicknames? What would you consider the hardest time you ever went through?
Well, the hardest time I ever went through was getting them back to land when the ship sank.
When the ship sank?
Yeah,
how did you get back from that?
I got picked up with a seagoing tugboat.
With a seagoing tugboat?
Now, there was a bunch of them got picked up on the USS Pioneer. It was a minesweep.
Yeah.
And then there's two or three other ships around there, some British mine destroyer. And the reason I think I had, I was in the water all night. I went in at just about dark and got out at sunup. And the reason I was in longer than a bunch of them, well, I wasn't any longer than the guys who were on the back of the ship with me.
Yeah.
But I outlived them. They didn't make it. And so there was a real big storm. There was 20 and 30 foot swells. And when we went, I went off the stern of the ship, right up off. I was on the gun crew clear on the back in the stern. And I went off the stern of the ship, and the waves was taking us away from the ship. And the ones that got off later, you know, they were more or less bunched up in one bunch, and they stayed more or less where the ship was. But when we went off the stern of it, the waves took us way on away.
Huh.
Well, then this tugboat came out from Bougie, North Africa to help. Well, what it came out for was in case the ship just got hit and was floating, they could tow it.
Yeah.
And of course the ship sank in 30 minutes. So it didn't get a pull anything.
Yeah.
It didn't get out there for it sank. But they stayed out there all night and picked up guys. They didn't pick the bodies up. They leave the bodies there. But I think we had about 12, 13 on that tugboat.
Do you know how many survivors there were on the boat when the ship sank?
900 and some.
And there was roughly 2,000? Over 2,000 on the ship?
In fact, it was the greatest single loss in World War II. Even it had more men on it than Arizona did. It lost more men than Arizona. But the reason they didn't, I don't know why they never did get it. It still isn't in the records anywhere much.
Yeah.
But when they did put out the amount that was in it, that was just American troops. Well, it was a British ship, so it didn't have the British crew on it, and they lost most of them. And the captain of the ship was from Ireland, and then there was some Red Cross workers on, and they lost some of them.
Yeah.
And the gun crews was Indian Navy from India, and lost quite a few of them. So we had lost more men than the Arizona lost.
Wow. Is there really anything else you can think of?
I was in North Africa to start with. That's where I was in North Africa about the time the war was over in North Africa.
Yeah.
And so we was going to go to Burma, China, and India by way of the Mediterranean, the Suez, to Karachi, India. And we got sunk the second day we was on that trip. We got sunk the day after Thanksgiving. So then I got lost there, I guess. So, because I was in a British hospital. I got picked up with a British tugboat. Was in a British hospital. And the rest of them all left. We had a few with us, but I mean most of them left.
Mm-hmm.
And they still can't get my records up to date. Celeste run it through, you know.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And she was she really disappointed that they didn't get it through. But they get me as far as North Africa. Around North Africa, and then they lose me from there to Bombay, India, which was about 2 months. But everybody's running through, that's where they come up for the loss.
Okay, that looks like it covered it pretty well.
And then, of course, you know, Korea's, everything is done by hands, you know. They can do stuff you can't even believe. They even drive piling for bridges by hand. They'd have a tower, you know, with a weight. They have a rope over the top, comes down along the railroad track there. They have about 500 men there. And they'd take hold of this rope and pull it to the top. And when it got to the top, there was two weights. There was one weight hooked to another one.
and when it hit the top, just one stayed up there and dropped the other one to drive the pile some.
Yeah.
And as this came down, it dragged, drug the rope back up the railroad track, and that many more got a hold of it and did it again.
Pretty crap.
They can do stuff with nothing.
Well,
we never did have enough stuff over there. That was the main thing. We never did get enough equipment over there, enough people.
What did you do without the most?
What
did you do without the most?
Parts for equipment.
Yeah.
I was clear up along in the front there where I had some road graders and bulldozers and stuff, and couldn't get no tires for the graders, so I could go clear down to Pusan, sign to get another grader, you know. Take the tires off of it, just leave it set there. Take the tires off and take them back up the front, because we didn't need the damn grader. We had a good grader.
Yeah.
So we'd go down there and take the bad tires and put them on them down there. They just didn't have nothing. Just not enough clothes, and never did get winter sleeping bags. In the about like our weather here.
Yeah.
On the 48 season.
Yeah.
And I come home about the time they were getting ready. Well, they were having that Panmunjom deal, and they signed kind of a ceasefire, but
yeah.
No, I was too old to be over there. If my record's been up to date, I'd never been there.
Yeah.
But see, I was never really discharged. I was on an active duty, and they said, you go. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And then, see, you didn't... It's terrible, and we're doing having the same trouble in Iraq. How do you know who the enemy is when they all look alike?
Yeah.
See, in Korea, during the day, they might be hundreds of those baggy pants farmers around there walking around, but actually when night comes, they're guerrilla fighters.
Yeah.
But they look just like the rest of the farmers when you look at them in the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Is that the way they mostly fought, was guerrilla warfare?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, they just come up and try to run over ours. And when they go, one time they held a spring offensive. That was the worst fight that I've ever been around. And the Chinese and the Koreans came marching up there. Just the United States set up their long tom rifles right on the west bank of the river. And they reach out there about 17 miles, reaching, getting those guys as they was coming in. And they had, in the end, they come through there to where they could dang near hand-to-hand fighting. That's how many of them come up through there.
A lot.
So I never didn't believe that they could do that. And they'd set those big long toms up first, then they set howitzers up, then littler field artillery.
Yeah.
They just kept coming. They killed some of them all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. The rest of them come right on. That was the last big battle up there we had.
Yeah. What was that called? That battle called?
Sure, the Spring Offensive was.
Spring Offensive.
Mm-hmm. No, it was a kind of a mess. We started out, see, what really made it so bad? The Korean and the Chinese are well-trained army, and they don't have to have anything to eat much. They make a whole rice and water, you know, they get the water where they're at, and they don't eat nothing but about rice and fish and stuff like that. Well, hell, we got thousands of people just taking care of our groceries, you know.
Yeah.
Big refrigerated trucks to home. And they just carried what they used. And then they go through a little town, you know. They recruit new people, because they, most of them guys, they never had enough to eat anyway. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to feed them, I guess they don't care whether they get killed or not. Then the religion says, if you get killed fighting for your country, for your religion, you go straight to heaven. You bypass that. No matter how bad you was, you go straight to heaven. That's what, same way over here where they're at now.
Yeah.
That's why you can get these suicide bombers.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you never had nothing to eat, enough to eat all your life. In fact, one time in Karachi, I was in India. I was running a motor, big motor pool there. And I had an Indian kid working for me. He was probably 14, 15. And so he just washed up parts and the floor and stuff. Mm-hmm. I had some silver work I needed done. And it was in the out-of-bounds area of Karachi, India, or Pakistan now, you know. So I gave him a 10-rupee note. Told him when he went home that night, he lived over in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And next morning he didn't show up. Well, the Indian police there said, why, you ought to knew he wouldn't show up. Give him 10 rupees. And I said, well, I said, he's been honest with me and everything. I said, I don't think that's what's wrong. I don't know what it is, but something wrong. So about noon they brought him in and they just beat the heck out of him, trying to make him say where he got the 10 rupees.
Yeah.
And he told them the truth, but they didn't believe him. And them cops that brought him up there, hit kind of a chief, he said in that kid's lifetime, he'd never have 10 rupees if he didn't steal it. In his whole lifetime, and I think it comes to about $5. And there'll be something, you know, all your life you ain't gonna have $5. You just can't believe how these people live.
Yeah.
And Karachi is on the, right on the edge of the biggest leper colony in Asia. There's thousands of them there. And, you know, now they don't, in the United States, they don't even quarantine you for leprosy.
Mm-hmm.
They can cure it like better, easier than a bad cold.
Yeah.
They can't stop the ravages of your body, you know, where, like, we had one old lady that stood around by our gate of our shop, or motor pool. You could see her tongue wobbling around through the side of her face, was full laid out. Well, they make some terrible ones, but we'd always give her a little bit. She's trying to say boxies, which mean gift. They had a little thing kind of like a tambourine. Mm-hmm. And anybody had a little bit of money, they'd give it to her so she'd leave.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, then one street in Karachi, India, Napier Road, or no, Napier Road, Napier Road. Anyway, it's about a 6-lane road. If you're rich enough, you live on the one side of the road, and if you're poor, you live on the other.
Yeah.
And the ones on the poor side wasn't even allowed to cross the street. The ones with money could cross it if they want to, but the others wasn't even allowed on the other side of the street.
Wow.
See, I was in three campaigns in World War II. I was in North Africa for a while, and then with Burma, China, and India till the war was over. And then after I come home and stayed a while, I went back to Korea.
How long did the Korean War last?
Oh, well, it started in around 1950,
yeah.
I think it was. And I think maybe they've signed a peace treaty, but I'm not even sure they ever have.
Hmm.
That other was just a ceasefire.
And that was look into that.
And that was in 51.
Yeah.
52, I guess.
And you were sent home in 52?
Yeah, I got out of the Army on my birthday. I was oldest the 21st. And 52, I think it was. No reason, I don't know why they come up with the idea that I'd get out on my birthday. It wasn't nothing to do with any time I was ever entered in or got out.
Coincidence, huh?
Yeah, I liked it, though. Yeah, it was a terrible place. It wasn't. We should have been able to win it easy if we'd had enough equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing about the same thing in Iraq. We are getting more troops there all the time, but we end up with not enough. I've always questioned the way they went over to Iraq. I mean, when you take a country that's with their religion, they believe that if you get killed fighting for your country, you know, you go to heaven, right? Straight over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know it's pretty hard to fight a group like that.
Yeah.
Because you and I won't live. You know?
Yeah.
We don't want to get shot. Well, I might. Celeste has got a book you ought to read. Did you ever see that book?
Uh-uh.
It's about this ship sinking. It's a pretty big book.
Yeah.
And it tells about how much trouble people had getting off the ship. And
yeah.
What I seen looked to me like I must have had I was on a different ship because they had some weirdos, way weirder things than I.
Yeah.
But then, see, I never doubt their word because I was up on the stern of the ship. And it wasn't directly hit. See, it was hit right in the middle. Right,
yeah.
You just draw a mark and grab somewhere, they got it right in the middle. Well, that anywhere that people were in that area, a lot of them got killed on the ship. And a lot of them got injured to a point where they wouldn't survive if they did get in the water. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a life jacket, a lifeboat that was workable. And then we used these life savers that just wrap around you like an inner tube.
Yeah.
Well, see, if you pass out, your face just drops down in the water and you drown. They use what they call a Mae West life jacket. It put it like a collar and it ties up around your neck. And if you pass out, your head don't sink into water. But these others was around your waist. You passed out, right? It just flop over.
Flip right over, like a bobber, huh?
Yeah, just flip. I don't know how many ships and how many thousands of people were transferred by ship during World War II, but there wasn't hardly any troop transports ever hit. Now, there was one that probably had more men on it than ours. But they didn't know it was a prison ship the Japanese had, and it sank in the China Sea over there with a bunch of prisoners of war on it. But they said it had more than ours did on it, but they didn't even know how many was in there.
Yeah.
I seen that thing coming from the time it left loose from the plane. Well, I seen the planes coming, and they really screwed us up because they came from over Africa. Well, hell, we had control of Africa. We never thought about it being German planes when they started coming. And then they had fighter planes with them to cover them. And this looked like a little fighter plane come down under this plane and had smoke coming out of the back like it got hit on fire. And what it was a guided missile with a jet-powered, when that jet was that black smoke coming out of
yeah.
it. And he come down and it just made a kind of a curve and got down from her seat on the water, and then here it just come just as straight at us with a, hit us right, well, maybe 10 or 15 foot above the water line when it went in, and it just opened that ship up both ways when it went off inside. Mm. And it was an old ship. They didn't have watertight compartments in it. Them older ships don't. You know, if that had been a newer ship, it may have not sank.
Yeah.
But it sank, they said, in about 30 minutes.
This was in World War II?
Yeah, it was in World War II. when the war was just over in Africa. And they switched across the Mediterranean into Italy, and we're in there. I had a brother-in-law on a destroyer that got sunk off of Salerno, but he didn't make it. Got my sister's husband.
Yeah.
How have you been doing down there? I haven't seen you before for a while.
I've been doing pretty good.
Which